Hi, welcome to the Whistleblower Newsroom. I'm Christina Borgeson, here with my partner in crime, Celia Farber. Obviously, we're going to talk about Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report. I just want to say some basic things about what he was supposed to do, just to set this thing up. His review of the Mueller investigation was for examining how it was conducted and determining whether Department of Justice policies and procedures were complied with. Now, that included, according to his report, quote, looking into whether the circumstances surrounding a decision, he means a decision made in the course of the investigation, indicated it was made on inaccurate or incomplete information or considerations other than the merits of the investigation. Now, even though the report provides ample details about the duplicitous process the FBI engaged in to get the FISA warrants, allowing them to spy on Trump campaign advisor Carter Page, for example, or how they even started this investigation, providing inaccurate information, omitting information, not bothering to corroborate information, including, by the way, FBI lawyer Kevin Kleinsmith, who's most likely going to be indicted, for doctoring the FISA warrant. Anyway, Horowitz characterizes these activities as, quote, errors in procedure. Today, our guest is veteran CIA analyst Ray McGovern of Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, who is also a correspondent for consortiumnews.org. Ray's written extensively about the activities, forensic evidence, and Mueller investigation connected to this whole Russiagate business. As a trained intelligence analyst, he's going to talk to us about what we really should be focusing on in this report, what sins of omission and flawed reporting have been committed here, and help us assess if Horowitz's statement that the FBI's activities constituted only errors of procedure makes sense, and why he thinks Horowitz came up with that conclusion. In short, Ray's going to help us look at how, as Lindsey Graham put it, the cake was baked here. Ray, welcome.
Thank you.
So, first of all, tell us what parts of this report struck you the most and why.
Well, Horowitz has issued a scathing indictment of how the FBI handled this whole thing. Even the New York Times yesterday, and this is significant, even the New York Times, two lead articles yesterday were titled, and I have them here, Withering Criticism of FBI as a Watchdog Presents Russia Inquiry Findings. And the other one is equally interesting. It's by Charlie Savage, and it says, We just got a look here at the national security surveillance state, and it was ugly. Now, these are the people in the New York Times that have been telling us that this, you mentioned the deep state, you're kind of some kind of lunatic, or that you have some sort of marriage with one of Trump's people. No. The national security state is real, and this proves it. This proves that the FBI was very much involved in this. Now, before I go on, I really need to remind folks. Many people ask me, Ray, come on. You're telling me that the top people in the Justice Department and the FBI and CIA and the NSA and the National Security Directorate of James Clapper? You tell me it's all lied like hell? How can you explain that? The answer is very easy. It's very clear that they were sure that Hillary Clinton was going to win. And so they did everything they possibly could to first exonerate her for her own crimes and then make sure that Trump wouldn't win. Now, these people in deep state, and I used the term advisedly, were shocked out of their minds when Hillary didn't win. Why were they shocked? Well, James Comey, in his book, says this, quote, "We were operating in an environment in which Hillary Rodham Clinton was sure to be the next president of the United States," period, end quote. Well, if that's the premise, you know, if that's the environment, you're going to do everything you can to help her defeat her opponent and be sure in the final analysis you never get caught. Because even if some of this skullduggery is revealed in later years, Hillary's the president, you're going to get promoted. You're certainly not going to get indicted. So that was the mindset. And what did that mean? That mean that these guys, these fellows, didn't even take rudimentary procedures, rudimentary precautions to keep their plotting out of the computers and out of the hard copy. So the current administration has the book on them. Let me just finish this little thing up by saying, yesterday, I think it was, I copied it down, Trump. Now, I very rarely quote Trump except to debunk, debunk being the word of choice here. Here's what Trump tweeted. "Are you listening, Comey?" Head of the FBI previous. "McCabe," his deputy. "Lovers, Lisa Page and Peter Strzok." You know about those. "The beautiful Orr family. Brennan, Clapper, and many more. Are you listening?" Now, what does that mean? That means that Trump has the goods on these guys. It was a soft coup. It was the deep state par excellence. Now, what's the next step? Well, Horowitz was only authorized to look at what the FBI did, and to a degree, what the Department of Justice did. He uncovered a series of transparent mistakes, all 51 of them aimed at securing a warrant, an illegal warrant to surveil one of Trump's, it's Carter Page, one of his volunteers in the campaign. And so it all hangs out there. But, you know, Horowitz is part of the system. There are limits to what he can do. And so he conveniently fell back into his own parameters and said, you know, I don't know why they did this. I mean, there's nothing in the guy who started this investigation. We looked at his emails. We couldn't find anything that said, "I hate Donald Trump. I want to do this for Hillary Clinton." Nothing. So we don't know why they did all these things. The only thing I can say is that we're not convinced by their explanations as to why they did this. So beats the hell out of us.
No.
Next step.
This makes no sense to me. I'll tell you why. I mean, he literally in his report, and this is the weird thing about his report, I felt like, you know, like somebody was smoking crack, because first they say one thing and then they say the opposite thing. Mm-hmm. He said that you have to look into the whether the circumstances surrounding a decision was made on inaccurate or incomplete information. He gives a whole litany of circumstances where decisions were made, you know, with inaccurate or incomplete information. And then he says, "Oh well, these were just errors these were not procedural errors." Are you telling me that it's proper procedure to not include stuff, not corroborate stuff, lie about stuff,
fabricate stuff?
Yeah, I mean, how does that? I don't. It's this is a schizophrenic report in my view.
And you could see that when Horowitz was in the exchange with Lindsey Graham, where he would come in and out literally of his own position. It was like, what's that word, quantum? You know, like when two molecules are in, or one molecule is in two places.
Right.
I'm sure my son will correct me later, "Mom, that's not what quantum is." Anyway, but you get what I'm like.
Yeah.
He was totally divided about. Because Lindsey Graham kept pushing him, well, is it, you know, is it criminal? Is it just a is it just unfortunate? And Horowitz kept I was listening to the language. His language was very crafty, and it was opaque language. But it was all leaning toward, oh, we're going to have a big old, you know, reform here. We're going to reform. We're going to learn from our mistakes. But at the same time, he actually said that laws were broken. Would you agree with that, Ray? I have the quote here somewhere.
Yeah, I think we have to be circumspect when we talk about Horowitz. He was very clear when he was asked a direct question. Comey says he was exonerated. Do you believe that to be the case? No. Did this go up to the very highest levels of the FBI? Yes. The only thing Horowitz would not permit him to say is that although the preponderance of the evidence indicates that the scale was tipped in one direction, he couldn't divine the motivation behind that. All he could say is, beats the hell out of me. But all I know is that when we asked why they did all these things, their answers were...
He didn't speak to motive.
This is driving me crazy. What does motive have to do with lying, omitting, not corroborating? I don't care what the motive was. If you did that, isn't that against the Department of Justice's rules and regulations? I mean, why does there have to be a motive? It's, you know, this is deja vu all over again. The Comey report, the same thing. He just changed the language a little bit and got Hillary off the hook for a criminal indictment.
They're masters at this. Here's a three-word Horowitz quote that I tweeted out. It's illegal surveillance, Horowitz said. It's illegal surveillance. So if it's illegal, then it's against the law.
If it's illegal, how can the
law? What are the consequences?
Right. How can that be called a procedural error?
Time out.
Okay.
We're going to calm down.
Context, all right? This is only the warm-up band. This is Horowitz doing his very tightly circumscribed job to look at the FBI and only the FBI. The DOJ only insofar as it doesn't touch the lawyers. The lawyers are exempt. The prosecutors and other high officials in DOJ are exempt from the purview of the IG of the Justice Department. So what we have here is the equivalent of an indictment that is not calling itself an indictment. The next step is the crucial one. Now, Attorney General Barr and U.S. Attorney for Connecticut, John Durham, have both said, we don't agree. Yeah, thanks very much, Mr. Horowitz, but we don't agree that this investigation was properly authorized, properly, as they say, predicated. Wow, that's the first time I've ever seen a boss of the IG of the DOJ, that is Attorney General Barr, and the fellow who has the power, has the portfolio to prosecute these guys, saying, no, we don't agree. Durham apparently said, you know, to open a full investigation on the scraps of information you adduced for that first FISA warrant, that's ridiculous, okay? Now, this means that the scene now shifts. It shifts from a guy who's very circumscribed in what he can do to a guy who has full authority to convene a grand jury to seek indictments. There's certainly going to be that one against that lawyer. Perhaps your listeners need to be reminded that there was a Justice Department lawyer very heavily involved in the FISA applications. Mm-hmm. And when the evidence was that the FBI was adducing, was that Carter Page was in touch with three Russians. Three of them, not one, three Russians. Okay, now they asked Carter Page, he said, I never heard of those first two guys. And the third one, yeah, I was in touch with them. I was reporting that to the FBI at their orders and their requests. So, you know, hello, did the FBI include that? Well, no, they didn't. And how was it that they could possibly exclude that? Because this fellow, this lawyer in the FBI, took a cable from, or took an email from the CIA, which said, yes, he was working for us on with this other guy who we were trying to get the book on. They changed that. This guy said, no, we had nothing to do. No,
that's Kevin Kleinsmith did that. Yeah.
So that's indictable for sure. Now, the question is, and this is the larger picture, the deep state is real. The Democrats, it was quite right amazing, with Lindsey Graham, there were several, about five Democrats, if I counted them correctly, said, no, the deep state is not, it's a fiction of somebody's imagination. No, it's not real. But one of the heads of the deep state, a fellow named Mike Morrell, who was the deputy CIA director and then the acting director for a while, bragged just a month ago. He said, oh, thank God for the deep state. Yep. We can keep the government honest.
Change
well,
of
hello,
tune
what
there.
Is it? This mm-hmm. is a deep state that we should be grateful for? No, there's no deep state. So there is a deep state. The question is, now that it is possible to indict these very, very high officials, and that could include Loretta Lynch, the former attorney general, although I would think the bets are against that. But it could include Brennan, for sure. Everyone kind of assumes from reading the record that he was orchestrating most of this. Clapper was his right-hand person. Comey was in it up to his neck. And, you know, those are the big guys. Now, if Trump acts according to his previous pattern, he'll flinch. Mm. He has been reluctant to take on the deep state. He has flinched every time it came up. Here's the best example I can remember. About 2 years ago, Congress had passed a law saying all the other records on the John F. Kennedy assassination must by law be released by a date certain 2 months ago. Now, Trump gets up before the cameras on the morning and says, I'm delighted to tell you that the rest of the documents until now kept secret on the JFK assassination will be released today as required by law. Well, got up 3:30 in the afternoon and saying, I have a correction here. The CIA and the FBI won't let me release those documents. They say they're still very sensitive. And so we'll revisit it in 6 months. Now, I made a little note, you know, my calendar, 6 months. I asked, you know, what gives? Well, everybody forgot about it. Now, that's a particularly blatant example of how Trump is not his own man. And so the denouement is about to happen. Trump has got to decide whether he backs his attorney general and his special prosecutor, his U.S. attorney in Connecticut, or he doesn't. I think Barr, now I have no brief for Barr's previous experience, but what he said about 2 months ago in that interview up in Alaska, you know, I don't care about my legacy. I mean, I've done what I want to do. I really feel serious about this soft coup that has been spying on the president. I think Barr is going to pursue this to the degree that he is allowed to pursue it by the president. And Durham, of course, will follow orders from Barr. So the next couple of months are going to be really, really interesting.
Okay, so Ray, you probably think I'm beating a dead horse here, okay? But I have to keep saying this. I don't care how limited Horowitz's mandate was. His conclusion does not match the information upon which he based his conclusion.
What conclusion are you referring to?
The fact that there were simply procedural errors.
That wasn't his only conclusion.
He didn't say simply, or he said major abuses that he could hardly believe. He was very hard on the FBI.
It is a harsh report. It's just his language is not harsh.
To do is indict them, and that's what Durham is going to do.
If it's a procedural error, it's like there's no, because it's like he's not supporting it's almost like I felt like he was saying it's not actionable because it's just procedural errors.
But
it's
he
not
referred the whole chain of command.
No, I know he did. It's like he passed the buck.
That's fine, though. Let him pass the buck. He's played his role, right?
not his job, Christina. His job was to investigate and find the facts. He did that. What he said was, you know, I can't explain why they did it. And when they tried to explain, it wasn't very convincing, but there it is. Now, it goes to the next step, to somebody who can convene a grand jury.
Right, right.
Can indict. And who, so that could take months. But that's where the action is now. And it all depends on whether Trump and Barr have the courage to proceed on the evidence that is so clear and so damning that Brennan and Comey and Clapper will be indicted. That's a biggie.
Why do you have to have the courage? I mean, if the laws are on the books and you've broken the law, why does courage have to come into it?
I just gave you an example, the release of the JFK papers.
Ask Chuck Schumer.
I understand that, but I'm saying that if there are laws on the books, just like the JFK release, if the law says they should be released, they should be released. Why should it?
Because state has six ways to Sunday to get you back, and everybody knows
that. I guess
what
I'm trying to say is I feel like people say, oh, the rule of law. We're a nation, you know, under the rule of law, the rule of law. Everybody keeps talking about the rule of law. And it's never applied when a politically sensitive or expedient matter is at hand. And it's usually one that is so critically important to maintaining our democracy,
right.
And it's not happening. So the fact that, you know, we're looking at this mealy-mouthed, you know, oh, yes, he provides the damning information and so on and so forth, but now he moves it up the chain where now it becomes a political decision whether this is going to be pursued to the fullest extent. And I'll tell you what, the American people are looking at this, and I have, you know, if I look at what happened with the POWs who are left behind, other, you know, major incidents in the past, I feel like a containment exercise will be underway. And a few people will be picked off, and that's it.
I feel like Trump has a choice between being destroyed by the deep state or being destroyed by the Democrats. So,
that's a good point.
For all intents and purposes, as was witnessed before the Lindsey Graham hearing, the Democrats are sort of in league with the deep state. The only thing different is that Democrats really contend that there isn't any deep state. And the deep state probably says, thank God. That's a great quote. Thank God for the deep state. So what does that mean? That means that the Horowitz thing should be looked at as the warm-up band, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He had very strict parameters. You read them, Christina. He couldn't go any farther. He's not able to prosecute. He's not able to convene a grand jury. He's an internal DOJ inspector general. He identifies the facts. It goes now to John Bryant, who's in Connecticut and who's the U.S. attorney the attorney general, William Barr, has appointed to look into not only the FBI, not only the Justice Department, but the CIA, but the NSA, and but the James Clapper, who headed up the whole national intelligence apparatus and who were responsible for this bogus intelligence community assessment issued on the 6th of January, 2017. And I say bogus because only one of those three words, intelligence community assessment, is correct. It was an assessment. What does that mean? It was a guess, okay? Intelligence community? Hillary Clinton says 17 agencies of the intelligence community approved that. A lie. Other people said, oh, no, it was only three. Another lie. Who prepared that assessment that everybody refers to now as the Bible? Handpicked analysts from CIA, FBI, and NSA. How do we know that? James Clapper, 5 months after Hillary Clinton, everybody else was saying 17 agencies. Clapper finally admitted, no, it wasn't even three. It was handpicked analysts from those three. Now, you've been around long enough, both of you, to realize that if you handpick the analysts, you're handpicking the conclusions. The conclusions do not stand up to scrutiny, and that's all going to come out in the wash because Bryant is empowered to interview the people who prepared that assessment. And you know who those people were? I make a joke of this, but there's hardly an exaggeration. Handpicked analysts? How'd that work out? Well, John Brennan picked Jim Clapper. And Clapper. Jim Clapper handpicked John Brennan. And that, my friends, explains the poor quality of that assessment. I've written, I've supervised, I've critiqued thousands of intelligence assessments. That's the very worst. That's the very most impoverished of evidence assessment that I've ever seen pretending to come out of the intelligence community.
So, Ray, it's fair to say, summing up, you were we're in the arena, and you were pretty happy with the warm-up band. They were okay. They were pretty good, and you're going to go get a soda and some popcorn, and we're going to come back for the real band, and you have high hopes for Durham. Is that a fair assessment?
It's not that I'm very happy with the warm-up band. I'm just satisfied that he did the job that he was supposed to do within the parameters that he had to work in.
Well, I think that sounds like you're sad. I mean, you thought it was a satisfactory performance from a man who's maybe not the most courageous, but it could have been a lot worse. I mean, he moved the ball.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at these kinds of things, after all, he is part of the Department of Justice, right?
Right.
After all, he made it very clear that his task not only was circumscribed in this direction, looking just at the FBI, but he was prohibited from looking at the lawyers in the Department of Justice, the prosecutors and the others involved. Why prohibited? Because that's the law. The IG of the Justice Department can't look into the high-level lawyers of the Justice Department.
Go ahead.
Who does that? The Justice Department does that in its Office of Political or Professional Responsibility. So that's how John Yoo got off. Yeah? Big-time lawyer. It clearly approved torture, and yet the IG couldn't do anything about it because he was a top-level lawyer,
right,
and they referred him to the Office of Professional Responsibility that said, oh, some of the underlying facts were not really all that, but we'll let him off. The torture lawyer let off by the Office of Professional Responsibility part of the Justice Department that has purview over these things. The IG does not.
I mean, I'm kind of speechless because I do think one thing that he did have within his purview was to look into whether or not the stories that were being told to him by these FBI officials were true. And, you know, he said, oh, he wasn't, wasn't his role to second guess discretionary judgments. Nobody's asking you to second guess discretionary judgments. They're asking you to look at whether, you know, the information provided behind those judgments was valid, was accurate, was true.
Well, he said they were untrue. He said they were terrible mistakes and that he couldn't figure out why they were made. That's the thing that it's the only thing that was unsatisfactory, but really totally expected by folks like me who have been around for a while. You, when you're working in an organization like the Department of Justice, and you go to Bill Priestap, or the guy who approved the initiation of the FBI inquiry into Donald Trump's campaign. Okay, you look, and you look at him, and he says, I wasn't affected by my political opinions. I don't even know what my political opinions were. But look at my emails. So they look at the emails, and they don't find anything in Priestap's emails that says he was as rabid an anti-Trumper as Lisa Page and Strzok. And they say, well, okay, we don't have much to go on. Why did you do it then? And he says, so to his credit, Harwood says, they had all manner of explanations as to why they did these things, but none of them were convincing.
Again, I just don't understand how motive is such a big deal here. I think you either, you know, lied about the information, didn't provide the information, gave uncorroborated false information, and that there has to be some accountability for that I mean, you're a government servant. You have sent people, you know, to jail. You have given people, Papadopoulos, you know, he's going to forever have this blot on his reputation and his record, you know. And for what? He was the critical moment where he was allegedly supposed to be talking to this guy, Mifsud. Mifsud denies it now, but Papadopoulos says that Mifsud was the one who told him about the Hillary emails. And Mifsud, by the way, was introduced to him by an FBI guy.
Oh, that fits our favorite phrase, an orgasm in search of a wedding.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, that's coming. It's all coming. That's in Durham's investigation. Now, he and Barr, very unusually, went to Rome. Why'd they go to Rome? Because one of these guys was attached to NATO and Italian intelligence and British intelligence. And Comey made him out to be, well, no, he's in touch with Russian intelligence. Well, that was a lie. But Durham knows all that, okay? And so this is the next step. Nobody likes things to go so slowly, but they're doing a pretty thorough job. The only question for me is, when does Trump say, okay, we stick it to them? Or says, conversely, it's a little dangerous. Everybody thinks the deep state is really pretty strong, and I agree. And Obama wouldn't take them on. Nobody takes them on. Chuck Schumer warned about six ways from Sunday to get back at you. And now Mike Morrell is saying, thank God for the deep state. I don't know if I want to do this. So the smart bet is that Trump will fold. But this time he's got an attorney general. Pretty hard on what's going on. He's talked about spying on the campaign, which of course is now revealed. Call it surveillance, but it's spying. He's talked about wiretapping. Wiretapping? Oh, there's no wiretapping. Of course there's no wiretapping. That went out decades ago. But there's surveillance, and that's what Trump, of course, meant, and that's what has been established. So we have to be patient and let the thing take its course. The good news is that the rich that Durham has is not circumscribed. And when you look at the kinds of things that Brennan testified to, when you look at the nature of that intelligence community assessment, which everybody, Fiona Hill, everybody, all the intelligence people thought the Russians hacked and all that stuff, well, this stuff is going to come apart. They're going to ask these handpicked analysts, were you free to pursue the facts as you saw them? How do you account for the squishiness of this assessment? You know, they're going to be under oath. Durham has the authority to pursue interviews with them. We know that it's possible to identify intelligence analysts. As a matter of fact, the worst national intelligence estimate ever written, the one that talked about weapons of mass destruction.
Yeah, took us into the war in Iraq.
Was October 1st, 2002, okay? We know who did that. Their names are in the document, okay? So why not, and I think Durham is probably doing this, go and find out. Who drafted this thing? What were their instructions? How much of a hand did handpicked analysts like John Brennan and James Clapper have in this? Look, they're guilty of sin. They can easily be found guilty. The problem is, this is big, okay? These guys are not going to take it standing down. They're not going to go to Saudi Arabia for a comfortable retirement. Too much is at stake. They're going to fight back. So if Trump takes them on, nobody knows how this is going to come out, especially in an election year.
Couldn't Trump say, let's just say, you know, it, to himself, okay, I'm rightfully terrified of the deep state, as anybody would be, but these guys can take it off of me and let the ball roll, as it's like what Christina's talking about. Why couldn't that be his answer to the question, should I, quote, confront the deep state?
I hope it is. All I'm saying is that the record shows
that he waffles when he's tapped on the shoulder by the deep state. Then he waffles. Right, but isn't this thing already rolling? So isn't it impossible to put it back in the bottle? So he can just, can't he just stand back and say, it's not on me? This is just what, this is what these people did, and I don't, I just work here.
I mean, for Trump to take that attitude?
Yeah, where is he pulling the cord or not pulling the cord on all this? Why does it come down to that he has to either make this go all the way or not? Why can't it be the system?
Because Bill Barr, his handpicked attorney general, will ask Trump, we got the goods on Brennan, on Clapper, on Comey. We have a lot of goods on Loretta Lynch, the Obama attorney general, for God's sake. How far do you want us to go with this?
What goods do you think they have on Loretta Lynch?
Oh, look how she met with Bill Clinton there to talk extensively about his daughter's wedding, right at the heat of the campaign. And she was supervising the people who approved these FISA warrants. I mean, she would, you know, you're in charge. If you're in charge, you're responsible. At least that's the way it used to be in government. So they've got stuff on people as high as the attorney general. Now, when they go to Trump and say, look, we get X, Y, and Z. This is what Brennan did. Clapper did. This is what the Comey did. So should we throw the book at them? Should we convene a grand jury or maybe three and indict them? Or should we just kind of back off and say, oh, this was disgraceful. This is really bad. We don't know what was in their
head. Well, America wants him to indict. I mean, I can't imagine Trump backing down. Well, actually, after listening to you, I can imagine it, and I understand about the waffle. But I feel like when he really, the war began, he threw down the gauntlet a couple years ago when he tweeted that Obama spied on me. It was a pretty bluntly worded tweet. Remember that tweet?
Yeah, it was dumb. I mean,
it was dumb.
You get his facts straight. You don't say wiretap, you say surveil. That's what was going on. So the opposition could even say, wiretap, for God's sake, that's ridiculous. Wiretapping stuff.
Well, okay. But is it fair to say that in essence he was correct, though he used the wrong language?
Yeah, and Barr has so.
Right, exactly. So that seems to me to be the moment where Trump decided to go all the way with this.
Now, what about the impeachment inquiry?
Because that was so provocative when he said that, and everybody said, and I'd like to go back and get some of the apoplectic mocking quotes from the media. May I just introduce something here? I feel that the real problem here that nobody's really talking about is happening in the language. I'm sure you guys have both read Politics and the English Language by George Orwell at some point. We were all made to read that in school, and it's a masterpiece.
I have not.
And it's about, okay, well, we'll read it. So Horowitz left these waffly, his language was so open to interpretation, and that caused the Trump-despising media to get right in there and write headlines. This is what I want to talk about, Ray, some of the headlines that came out, how in the mainstream media, what the story seemed to be to them. And I was just scrolling here trying to find some so I can give some examples. So I got on the New York Times page on Twitter. I had to scroll an awful lot to find anything about this. I finally found one that says, the Justice Department Inspector General, who reviewed the FBI's handling of its investigation into Russia's 2016 election interference, testified in a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on Tuesday that his report didn't, quote, vindicate anybody who touched this. Now, that's pretty good for the New York Times. But what I'm getting at about language, and you were all of us, all about language. And Ray, I love the way you look at language and you talk about how language impacts everything. Didn't vindicate anybody who touched it. Like the way they use these double negatives and stuff. Is anybody with me on this? This is how the fix gets put in. This is how they do it. That you don't call a spade a spade.
So
the language could change, the country could come out. I mean, half the country is in a spell about this.
Yeah, but
this,
they do it on purpose. They don't call a spade a spade on purpose.
I
mean,
they do it on purpose.
This is the thing that...
Christina,
right, I know.
They do it
I know.
That's my whole point. They do it on purpose.
Right.
Not just that. It's witchcraft, practically. It's like... It's advanced spell casting so that people kind of go, oh, yeah, well, it wasn't perfect. Mistakes were made. All this passive language drives me up the wall. Ray, what do you say?
So you put your finger on the main problem here, and that is the media. A quick way of saying this is the media is part of the deep state. You know, I used to talk about the MIC, we all did, the military-industrial complex, right? The thing that Eisenhower warned us against. Well, now it's the Mickey Mat. I think I've said this before. It's the military-industrial congressional intelligence, media, academia, think tank complex. Mickey Mat. Now, why did I say media? Because that's the new sine qua non element for this whole thing to work. Who
Correct.
Controls the media? The rest of the Mickey Mat. Okay? So the question really is, how can the media handle a situation where they have been proven to be absolutely wrong, not only on Russiagate, but on the deep state, okay? Ridiculing the notion, the very notion that could be a deep state, even though a former acting CIA director says, thank God for the deep state to keep these other people in government honest, okay? So that's the rub here, the media. Now, how is the media going to react? You read a New York Times headline from a couple of days ago, okay? More interesting one, the interesting ones are the two from yesterday, the ones that I read before. I'll read them again.
Please
Withering
do.
Criticism of FBI as watchdog presents Russia inquiry findings. And the other one, and this is Charlie Savage. You know, he pretends to be a real legal scholar as well as good writer. We just took a rare look at national security surveillance. It was ugly, period. Whoa! So, it's premature to think that the New York Times will be honest for once. It has so much stake in supporting the deep state. I mean, a lot of its stories come from John Brennan, from the people who leaked from the FBI. We know that.
By the way,
but ugly, I would say America wants to know, was it criminal and are they going to jail?
We're talking about the press.
Yeah.
Okay. And
the media.
Let us not.
The media, yeah, good.
The media. Let us
we don't
not
have a
forget. Let us not forget that literally within 24 hours of the DNC saying that their computers were hacked, okay, Robbie Mook, okay, Clinton's campaign manager, went on ABC this week and told them that the DNC had been hacked by the Russians for the purpose of helping Donald Trump. How he knew that in such a short span of time is kind of an interesting mystery. So that's where it began.
That's right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, Hillary was already accusing Trump of being soft on Russia. But the way it actually played out was Julian Assange announced on the 12th of June, 2016, I have emails relating to Hillary Clinton and their pending publication, his exact words.
Mm.
Whoa! What happened? Well, 2 days later, you get CrowdStrike. The DNC hired and paid for cyber firm saying, we've looked at those emails and there are Russian fingerprints on them. Now, we have proven those Russian fingerprints were synthetically superimposed on the emails. Okay. Next day, the 15th of June, 2016, Lucifer 2.0 arises out of the ashes. A persona. Persona. Who knows who this persona or what this persona is? Well, Bill Binney, the former National Security Agency technical director, and I suspect that persona was John Brennan. Why? Because it had whole thousands of people waging offensive cyber war tools, to include one called, what was it called?
Marble.
Marble Framework, okay, which allowed someone to hack into a system or a computer, disguise who it was that hacked it, and leave little breadcrumbs, little telltale signs like in Cyrillic and so forth. Now, we have more evidence that that was the case. Just came out a couple of weeks ago. Technical evidence, the principles of physics and forensics, okay? Not squishy stuff like I do, political analysis. So there it is. Will we ever get a chance to tell the American people that? That's the question. That's why I'm delighted to come onto a program like this, on the chance that some people will look into it and say, well, is McGovern crazy or is there substance to his charges?
Now, Ray, you move in circles, I'm sure, where a lot of people don't have a lot of love for Donald Trump, but you hold the admirable position that truth is truth and facts are facts. Are you surrounded by people who basically, or do you encounter people who take the attitude, we're kind of glad they did what they did because he's such a terrible president, and thank God for, is that what they mean when they say thank God for the deep state, because that they wanted a duly elected president taken down by an internal coup, even if it compromised all our intelligence agencies, et cetera, et cetera? So does my question make sense?
you put your finger right on it. You know, it's a false dichotomy. You know, I swore an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. So did all of my colleagues, okay? We take the Constitution very, very seriously. And when somebody wins a presidential election, no matter how disreputable, I could think of many, many adjectives. I should parenthetically insert here that I think Donald Trump is the very worst president the United States of America ever had or is likely to have. Now, that said, it's a choice between adhering to the Constitution, the duly elected president, and preferring to get rid of him by whatever means. Everything is fair in love and war. We're at war with Donald Trump. Why can't you get on the bandwagon, McGovern? It's the same thing that they charged Robert Perry. My mentor in journalism, who died 2 years ago, they said, look, Bob, doesn't matter what the facts are, for God's sake. We got to get on the bandwagon. We have to get rid of this guy. That's the priority. Well, yeah. Yep.
The ends justify the means. That's a philosophy that's very pernicious.
What he's done in leaving the parish accords, for example, my grandchildren, 9 of them, will not have clean air to breathe or clean water to drink because of what Donald Trump has facilitated and what he has done. There are all kinds of other extra constitutional things that he's done. Impeach him on those things. I think the Democrats, for what it's worth, I'm not a domestic political analyst, but my guess is that they keep shooting themselves in the foot. This Biden is finished. That was their preferred candidate by raising this Ukrainian thing. Biden is finished. And they have, they'll get the impeachment going. But there's so much that the Republicans can adduce at the trial that it will be self-defeating, in my view, and it will help, God help us, Trump to have a good chance to have 4 more years. That's the thing we should worry about.
Ray, I want to ask a very basic question. If you were speaking to a group of students, or speaking, I don't know how old your grandchildren are, but let's just say, well, let's say school-age children, and you wanted to tell them about Watergate, and you wanted to help them understand how that scandal compared to this scandal, how would you tell them about those two incidents? How do these two things compare in the most elemental way you could possibly describe it, the size of the crime?
I just say, you have two abusive presidents, okay? And they got Nixon for his abuse of power. They were about to impeach him, and he quit. Now, the
same thing. Slow down a second. His abuse of power, which was? Let's just state it.
Sending his plumbers into the Democratic national offices and so forth, and then lying about
it. To spy.
The kinds of things that he was duly, there were articles of impeachment voted against him, 3 of them, bipartisan vote, and he was about to be impeached. Now, on this one, Trump had been impeached 2 years ago, and I said so, in writing many, many times. Now, why did they not do that? Well, for the same reason that Nancy Pelosi didn't impeach George Bush for starting a war of aggression condemned by Nuremberg. You know, Nuremberg said a war of aggression, to launch one, is to commit the supreme international crime, differing from other war crimes only insofar as it contains the accumulated evil of the whole. Think torture, think kidnapping, think all the other abuses, mm-hmm. the accumulated evil of the whole. Now, Nancy Pelosi could have impeached him after the Democrats took over the House in 2006, okay? What'd she do? Well, she didn't want to appear divisive. She told John Conyers, and John Conyers told me and Cindy Sheehan this, Nancy thinks that we won't win as big in the next election if we appear divisive. Oh, and God. And Fox News will have a great play out of it. And then just 2 days ago, Nancy Pelosi defended herself and said, I didn't think that launching a war against Iraq was impeachable. Well, what planet does she come from? When did she last read the Constitution of the United States? Does she know anything about World War II or Nuremberg? Offensive acts of aggression? She probably knows, but politics comes first, okay? She had to be dragged to impeach.
So and the way we she do was not...
dragged to impeach was a CIA guy working in the NSA. I mean, what could be more obvious? A CIA guy working in the National Security Council. After Russiagate fell apart, they came up with Ukrainegate.
Who's the whistleblower? It didn't fall apart cheaply for the American taxpayer.
That worked for Joe Biden, for God's sake.
But what I'm getting, okay, the, back to the plot. I mean, this dossier, this spy, Christopher Steele, who's posing as a journalist, the whole thing, I don't know what it, I don't even know how to categorize it, because it's simultaneously so wicked and so complex and so kind of bumbling and just flat out weird. That with the way our measuring stick is Watergate. That's so embedded in our psyches as Americans. Is it better or worse than Watergate? That was about spying. Watergate was about
no. But things have gotten bigger and better now because there was no real accountability. He was allowed to just retire, you know.
Time out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead. Okay.
Difference. Okay.
What
during Watergate you had a free media. You don't have a free media now.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, most Americans believe what you have so well described. They believe because they watch the TV, because they read the newspapers. They have no way of knowing what's really going on, and that's the big thing that Trump has to take into account. My God, if I impeach these guys, what's the media going to do? The only optimistic note comes from these two headlines in the New York Times. Yesterday, it could be, I mean, I can't rule it out. It could be that the New York Times and the Washington Post will say, okay, we were wrong on weapons of mass destruction. We were wrong this time, too. It looks like the FBI, CIA, and the National Intelligence Director were after Trump from the beginning. Looks like they violated the law willy-nilly. It looks like that's proved in paper. So we acknowledge now that when we disparage the deep state, we were wrong. They do have a lot of power. And now, thank God for those who go against the deep state and reassert the provisions of our Constitution.
Do you think Durham knows that the emails were not hacked by Russia?
You know, it's such an article of faith now. You know, it's sort of like Galileo. Insisting that, what he was mm-hmm. accused of and mm-hmm. was convicted of. There's such an article of faith that I'm not sure that Durham knows. But all I can say is that Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, two of whose members were former technical directors of the NSA, are at his disposal. Now, wonderful. Curiously enough, President Trump, when he read our memo, our VIPS memo of 24 July 2017, mm-hmm. went to his CIA director, Pompeo, at the time and said, look, have these guys explain to you what's going on. Bill Binney walks into Pompeo's office on the 7th floor CIA headquarters, and Pompeo says, "You're probably wondering why I asked you to come in here." And Bill said, "Well, yeah." He said, "Well, the president told me that if I wanted to know the real story on Russian hacking, I needed to talk to you." Okay, that was the 24th of October, if memory serves, 2017. What happened? Well, Bill is a very plain-spoken guy, as you probably know. He says, "Well, I have to tell you, Mr. Director, that your people are lying to you, and I can prove it." "Oh, I don't think that's only..." Do you have any contacts with the FBI or the NSA?" Yes, Bill says, "Well, NSA, they all know me there, but FBI, yeah, last contact was about 8 years ago when they broke into my home at 6 o'clock in the morning, pointed a gun at me as I was taking a shower, pointed a gun at the head of my wife and my child. Yeah, that's the last time I had any dealings with the FBI, and they knew, the FBI knew at the time, and I can prove it, that we weren't guilty of leaking anything. They already knew who the leaker was. So yeah, that's what I know about the FBI." So what does Pompeo do? He says, "Well, would you ask the FBI to look into this?"
Oh, God.
Give me a break. "Why don't you do that, Pompeo?" And he never did, or he never got back to the president. So that's how, you know, deep state does not even feel allegiance to the president. They know what's best. And as Mike Morrell said, thank God for the deep state, because otherwise the government would run amok. They'd have a decent relationship with Russia. We wouldn't be able to build so many arms and spend so much money on defense. Oh, my God. Thank God for the deep state.
Ray, where can our listeners find you? We have about a minute left.
Okay, well, thanks for asking. My son always says, "Dad, for God's sake," he's my webmaster. Shouldn't the web. So I can be found on Twitter, Ray McGovern. But my website is raymcgovern.com. Okay, real, real easy. Okay, my son always says, "Tell him, Dad, if you don't get it, you don't get it." That's a little arrogant, but there's a lot of stuff on there. I also work for consortiumnews.com. They pay me for my articles, and that's one reason I can keep going. So Consortium News, of course, has a broad array of many more things on the spectrum. But my stuff can all be found on raymcgovern.com. And I also include other worthy appearances on tape or lectures.
Yeah, you're all over YouTube.
Pardon?
You're all over YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube, apparently people don't read my turgid prose as much as they used to look, at least at my visage, which was more presentable than it is now.
I very much doubt your prose is turgid.
You're always presentable to us, Ray. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.